looking at thing, looking at the did she got a nice back of jar. Edit.
4, 2.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
I'm not arguing that our package is the best, although I think we do have a very strong package to offer.
Dirt and Sprague.
We have the best package.
Wait time I get excited.
Andy Dirt Johnson. Brandon Sprague.
I'm not fourth fiddle. I want to be number one.
It works.
Dirt and Sprague.
When you're about to get freaky at night, you think about it.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number 3, Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM, the Odyssey app. Live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody. The band is back together. It's good to everybody back in the fold. The month of July is almost halfway over. I don't know what the hell's happening, but time's flying, and we are getting closer and closer, ladies and gentlemen.
It's the 7th. What do you mean it's halfway over?
We're halfway to halfway, and then it's over.
I guess.
And then you know what's here?
Well, it's already here.
August. And
we got football stuff to talk about.
You know what happens? A month from yesterday, you know what we get? A month. Did you talk about this on the show yesterday? Please tell me you did.
Absolutely.
Please tell me you did.
Yeah, dude.
We were a month away yesterday.
Yesterday.
From the Hall of Fame game.
Absolutely.
That we're all going to watch the entire first half.
I will watch the beginning of it.
Right? We all will. You just want to see it on your TV.
I want to hear the theme music.
Yeah.
I want to see the helmets.
Give me the jerseys and logos.
Then I'll see Desmond Ritter, and I'll be like, oh, see you later.
Okay, click. Let's watch something else on TV. But also, college football closer and closer. Media days are starting.
Who is the Hall of Fame game this year?
That's a good question. I actually had the tweet, and then I'll have to go find it. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But we are closer to the start of college football. Big 12 media days are happening today. Big 10's right around the corner. Who do we get? Who's the Hall of Fame game? Tell me it's a good game. I'm watching either way, so actually I don't care. None of them are good games.
I think I have found a way you won't watch.
I'm watching. But what is it? Give it to me. Let me guess. Panthers involved?
Holy crap.
I mean, the Panthers are, if you just think of teams you don't want to watch, Panthers are in the category.
Yeah.
Browns.
Mm-mm.
Dang it.
You're close.
Oh.
Even more forgettable.
Even more Cardinals? It's Panthers and the Cardinals. This is a Hall of Fame game? God, that's bad. Hey, what's his nuts? Miami quarterback, Carson Beck. Carson Beck, Hall of Fame game.
Has he signed his contract yet?
I don't know. That's a good question. Let's talk some college football, Cruton. Back to more positive notes. Oregon pushing for the number one class in the country. Oregon State on a nice run.
Yeah.
And joining us now is our good buddy, Andrew Nimmick. At Andrew Nimmick on Twitter, the Substack, the West Coast Bias Recruiting Substack, you can go check out where he covers recruiting for all the Northwest schools and on the West Coast. Nimmick, good morning to you. What is with Oregon fans' spring freak out over recruiting rankings? And then it feels like every year all of those fears go out the window by some date or another when Oregon gets on a heater, which it appears that they're on right now.
I don't know. Official visits happen in June every year. It seems like Oregon kind of stacks the deck and gets ready and gets their top guys on campus. This was the same thing for Oregon State. It's a game plan for everybody, top to bottom. And so that's kind of why I found the whole thing silly. They were in the mix for a number of big-time recruits, and everything looked very, very positive. So the noise that, like, what's going on? Why are they fifth in the Big 12 or Big 10? It's like, well, they're in the mix for 7 5-stars. So we'll see. They're probably not going to get all of them, but even if they get half of them, they're in pretty good shape. So I never really understood it, but I think – coming off a season in which you get blown out in a playoff game, I think there's some hand-wringing and some nervousness, like, is this thing slipping away? And no, it's business as usual. Oregon's going to sign a top-five class, and only one team can win it at the end of the year. And so far, that hasn't been Oregon, and until it is, people are going to continue to call them off-season champs. But they continue to be, at the very least, off-season champs and on-field a top four team in the country.
Right.
Dan Lanning's recruited pretty well since he's been there, and he's trying to get that number one spot. I know some sites have him 2 or 3, just depending, I guess, where you check. But being within, like, striking distance, he knows it as well as anybody in that sport that's doing it. Like, you got to have the Jimmies and the Joes. Have we learned anything from the way he's recruited the last 2 years from his run early on so far at Oregon, or has it just continued to be scoop up as many 5-stars? There's, like, it feels like the receiver position, for example, is an area that's grown a little bit the last year and a half. I don't know if I'm misreading that, but is there any takeaways for you with Dan Lanning from where he was year one as the coach to where he's at now sitting at number 3?
I mean, I think he's evolving. I think their approach is evolving. They've dominated the West region for a number of years. I know a few years ago they had the number one prospect in Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Arizona, California. You know, they wanted to, I think it was 7 West states, they had the number one player. So they want to do a great job, and everybody does, but they prioritize doing a really good job in the West region, getting big-time athletes on the West Coast, and then finding players and not being intimidated about going and getting elite program-altering players in other states. They did it this year with Michigan, with Tennessee, with New Jersey. It's really Oklahoma is another state where they went and got. So those are big-time states. Oklahoma, turns out, has the Sooners, and Texas is there, you know, and they're getting five-star guys from these places. They might, in the next, on Saturday, land one of the top linebackers in the country out of Ohio, Braden Feaster, who's down to Oregon and Georgia. So we're seeing this group is not intimidated to go nationally, to go into the South, to go into some of the hotbeds of the Big Ten schools, beating people out in Pennsylvania, beating people out in Michigan for top kids. So that's huge. The other thing we're learning is that this staff is now understanding NIL. And I think they're doing a great job of that, balancing. If you're going to go get 3, 4, 5 5 stars, you're probably going to have to take a flyer on a 3-star kid with some upside. And I think they've done that a couple different times in this class. Achilles Reyna is a 3-star defensive tackle commitment out of Washington. The dude's a 6'8" basketball recruit who's played football for like 18 months, and he's really impressive. He's got a ton of offers. He's really raw. It's going to take time, but maybe that's a kid in NIL world you don't have to pay quite as much. And if you take a haircut on a kid like that, it gives you more wiggle room to go stack 3 or 4 or 5-star guys. So I think they're doing a really nice job of balancing that. You can't get 25 stars anymore. And you'll see that 5-star recruits are all spread out. It's not just, you know, the Oregons and Texas Techs of the world each get 12. They can't afford to. You have to hand pick where you want them and then really do well at the bottom end of your class, shooting it upside. And I think they're managing that about as well as anybody in the country.
Yeah, we're talking with Andrew Nimick, West Coast Bias Recruiting Substack and podcast. Go check it out and subscribe at Andrew Nimick on Twitter. I do want to ask you about Oregon State because you've had some good reporting on them and kind of the inroads that they've made, especially here locally in recruiting. But last one, I'm just curious of on Oregon of they've been on this kind of run here the last, you know, handful of days. So who are the latest commitments that they've got culminating in a 5-star receiver at the end of last week? And then, you know, this idea of finishing with the number one class, what's still out there, and what are the names that Duck fans need to keep an eye on of maybe commitments to come? I know you mentioned one, but how many more here are on the horizon?
Well, I think they're pretty close to done. They have 24 commitments. That's a big class for Oregon. They always save a little wiggle room to flip a kid potentially, or to land a late riser, a senior that just comes out of nowhere, but is maybe a 3-star kid who suddenly the recruiting rankings go, hey, this is maybe a top 100 kid in the country. They put themselves in a position to go after one or two of those. But generally, recruiting is pretty much done by now. I know that's weird for folks, but ever since they moved official visits up to spring instead of the fall, most of the kids are committed. In fact, I think 96 of the top 100 kids in the country are already committed. So there's just not much more wiggle room to go. I mentioned Braden Feaster, who's a really talented linebacker. That's an Oregon versus Georgia battle. And Kirby Smart really wants him. He's pulled no punches. I've got a story coming out later today that Oregon, as far as I've heard, it's tough to poke holes in Oregon as a developer. But I have heard that they are being negatively recruited at linebacker, specifically by Kirby Smart, that he's taken shots at landing. So they really want Braden Feaster, and I think he's going to end up being a Duck. In terms of big commitments they've gotten in the last few days, keep in mind 12 commitments since June 1st. The biggest name on the board for him, landing Hayden Stepp and Xavier Saab is just absolutely massive. Hayden Stepp, 6'3.5" corner from Bishop Gorman. Not only is that a pipeline state, not only is that a state that Oregon used to struggle in and now dominates, but Hayden Stepp played alongside true freshman Jet Washington, who's a 5-star recruit in this year's class. So they're repairing the best secondary in the country last year with Hayden Stepp and Jet Washington. They also got Xavier Saab, who's out of New Jersey, Glassboro. He's a 5-star athlete, just dominant. He played running back in the Under Armour All-American game, kind of just to try it. He's that good an athlete, but he's actually a kid who's a receiver. He pairs with Dakota Grant for probably the best receiving core in the history of the program in one class. And then Tay Walden is a two-way athlete who had a bunch of different options, most of the SEC, most of the Big Ten. He's a kid that people say would be a top 60 recruit, whether he was ranked as a corner or wide receiver. Mm. What an absolute luxury. If it doesn't work on one side of the ball, hey, your route running is kind of weird, go play corner. Hey, your hands aren't great, go play corner. Or, hey, you're a great corner, you're picking off a lot of passes, we could use a receiver. He's that level of athlete. So it was a really nice end, particularly at the beginning of July there.
Oregon State seems to be on a nice little run. It felt like a week straight. It just felt like I kept seeing news pop up, and you were writing about what they've been doing. I'm really curious because we've heard, you know, stuff with some of these showcases that Shepherd goes in there and he's pretty authentic to who he is, and he doesn't care if you see him or hear him screaming at players and getting in their face and challenge him a little bit. I'm just curious what you make of the new approach, the new staff, and the way they're recruiting versus what the previous staff had done under Bray.
Well, they're doing a really nice job with in-state recruiting, and I think that's really important. You know, when you talk to the Westlands and Central Catholics of the world, they're quick to point out that this staff is very present and they know the coaches. They know their names. They've gotten to know who those people are. And not only that, they've done a good job as far as I can tell, because there are coaches who are blowhards. There are coaches who are really old school who don't necessarily know, even though they're good high school coaches, they don't necessarily know recruiting particularly well. They've weeded that out pretty well. And some of the coaches that I rely on for my info for what's going on, who's developing, who looks good, it turns out those are some of the coaches that Oregon State has quickly discovered are good sources of information as well. And those are some of their main people that they're talking to. So that's a good sign. I think on the recruiting trail, they also were unafraid to go and battle some folks for quality prospects. They beat out Michigan for Thaddeus Thatcher, a three-star quarterback out of Nevada with a lot of upside. And that was an interesting one. Thatcher was set to commit to Michigan in mid-April. They kind of surprised him by taking another quarterback and said, hey, we're going to take your commitment too. We'll take two of them. They already have Bryce Underwood, who's a mega recruit, a young player that was the number one player in the country a couple years back or last year. So he kind of reassessed his board, and Oregon State made him a priority and said, we're not taking two. You're our guy. And it was head-to-head Oregon State, Michigan down to the end. I'm told money was the same, if not Michigan having maybe a little bit of an edge there. And Oregon State just won that battle. James Finley, a former Oregon receiver, is their wide receiver coach. He's got his hooks in California. They landed a couple really good players, including Landon White out of Southern California. Landon White had almost 30 scholarship offers. So, again, being really unafraid, being really authentic to themselves, to your point, on the recruiting trail as well, not just at camps. And so far, it's working very well. Do I think it's a top 25 class? Not a chance, but I think it's a really good foundational piece that can eventually lead to them, if they have success on the field, eventually having top 35, top 30 recruiting classes nationally. It's going to be a stepping stone. This is a program that really, really struggled. Not that anybody needs a reminder. Last year in the fall, and that feels like 3 years ago with the way that they've distanced themselves from that and put in some positive steps here.
Yeah, but reading all this stuff from you about how bad their last staff was at recruiting, that's got to be the music to the ears of Oregon State fans of like, that's Jimmy's and Joe's is how it starts, man. You got to go start finding those guys and then start building from there. How should Washington fan feel about their class? I mean, there was a moment in the spring where it looked like they were in the top 15 and their, you know, writers were bragging about how look where our class is. We're ahead of Oregon, and now it looks like they're near the back end of the top 25. I know they picked up an offensive lineman last week, but the overall rating per commit doesn't seem to be as strong as some of the other Big Ten teams. Just if you were a Husky fan, how would you feel about Jed Fish's efforts recruiting year going into year three?
So that's a really good question. I think they're doing – you must do this for a living.
Hey, look at that.
I always hate that when I ask a good question and then somebody says that to me. I don't know why I did that to you, but, yeah, it's a great question.
Thank you.
Washington's doing a great job with in-state recruiting, and they can really bang their chest about that. They went head-to-head with Oregon last year for five-star offensive tackle Cody Green. Now, he was at Mater Dei for his last couple years of high school, but he grew up in Washington. He was a Washington kid. And they went and beat Oregon for him. Jacoba Doyle is the offensive lineman you mentioned. That was another one. Oregon had him higher on their board than one of their eventual takes, and it just turned out that they felt they were going to lose him to Washington in another head-to-head battle. Do I think that Washington's recruiting better than Oregon? No. And I don't think Washington staff thinks they're recruiting better than Oregon. But they are now able to go head-to-head, especially for kids in the state of Washington with Oregon and pull out a victory here and there. And I think that's a good sign for them. In general, like, we need to have an honest conversation about Washington. And I'm not trying to be a jerk about it, but the vibes are terrible right now. And I think the staff's doing a great job. But you've got a head coach who maybe wants to leave or just kind of perpetually wants to leave wherever he's at. They had to sue their quarterback to come back. People can say whatever they want about Oregon and their history with players and retention and transfers and whatever they want to say. But Peyton Pritchard, Sabrina Ionescu, Dante Moore, Marcus Mariota are all superstar athletes who had monster junior seasons who elected on their own to come back. At Washington, they had to sue their star quarterback to come back. That's never a good sign. And I think in terms of out-of-state recruiting, Washington has to deal with the fact that people are going to say, dude, their head coach wants to leave and their quarterback tried to leave and they made him stay. And so I think, yes, there was momentum. I think they did a decent job. It's right on the edge of a top 25 class, and it's a great class for in-state recruiting. They leave a lot to be desired right now in terms of their messaging out-of-state, not on the recruiting trail, but just, again, vibes check and how easy it is to recruit against a program that had to sue their quarterback to come back. I just can't emphasize that enough. It's a bad look in the transfer era where kids are like, well, what if I don't like it and I want to leave? Somebody can be like, hey, they might sue you. They did it to their studs. So.
Told him to go to his room and shut up.
Yeah, that's right.
Pac-12 not going to do a media day, and we're pretty accustomed to Pac-12 media days in the past, Pac-10 media days. I know the conference is relaunching and it's a new one, but just your thoughts. We're probably going to talk about it after we get off the horn with you. I think it's a bad look. Where are you at on it?
You know what? I think the Pac-12 has done a phenomenal job largely when it comes to a rebrand. This is not an easy thing to do, to develop as a group of six and negotiate a media rights deal that by all accounts was underwhelming. At least that's what I've heard behind the scenes. But I think the last couple weeks have been a couple of pretty giant missteps for Teresa Gould and the Pac-12 to say it's inappropriate to release media numbers. We do this. We all talk about this, right? We talk about the ratings for the World Cup and how much Fox paid for the World Cup and the ratings for the Super Bowl and how much somebody paid for the Super Bowl. I mean, this is what we do. This is part of sports, is we talk about how much schools are getting paid and what the goal is with their TV rights deal. It's sort of part of the way that we discuss the importance of sports these days. So to say it's inappropriate just didn't ring true at all. It just was so obvious. Like, this is, everyone says their numbers. You got to bite the bullet and say your number, even if you're disappointed in that number. And I thought that was disingenuous. And I thought it was the first time I ever went, oh, I thought they were kind of rebranding as not small potatoes, but this is like garage sale level stuff instead of a big business. Like, why are you not saying what your number, you know, you guys decide what the number is. It just seems weird. And then to not have a Pac-12 media day, again, every conference has a media day. You have to have one, and you have to have one because it's an opportunity to sell yourself, and it's an opportunity to sell your brand and sell your athletes. It's an opportunity for the media. You're saying, media, come here, cover our athletes, and you're hoping to catch eyes, and they go, you know what, that kid's a really cool story, or that kid's really well-spoken. I'm going to watch them on Saturday night when there's nothing else going on at the 7 p.m. game on the West Coast. I want to tune in and see what that kid's got. Instead, you just kind of punt on that opportunity. I think they've largely done a great job. This last, call it week and a half, is the first time I've seen big missteps. And to me, they're gigantic missteps. We realize that we're not where we want to be. And instead of just kind of being loud and proud about who we are, we're going to kind of hide. And I just think that's terribly disappointing.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Andrew Nimick, go check out the Substack, West Coast Bias Recruiting, the West Coast Bias Podcast. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Andrew Nimick. Nobody better covering West Coast recruiting, up and down, in particular for Oregon and Oregon State. Thanks as always for the time, Nimick. Let's do it again soon.
Sure.
There you go. Andrew Nimick. Sure.
Sure.
And he was a little intimidated by my good question. I think I threw him off. That's how good my questions were. Do you like that? You like that heat? Huh? Step up your questions over there, all right?
Is there a little bit of a competition in an interview when someone goes, oh, it's a good question?
Damn it.
Mine was a good question.
Let's talk about it, shall we? Recruiting is good. Positive on both fronts there.
Sure.
Check the box. Check the box. Yeah. Oregon and Oregon State doing what they need to do. We're not going to know the number, and you don't want to tell anybody about your product? Bad look. Next on The Fan. All right, we'll jump into the NFL coming up in a little bit. Don't forget, Millsack, top of the hour. Your questions welcome, 503-864-6326.
Let's go!
Fire them off. Your Sparta TRT mail sack. Always a delight on a Tuesday. Great to come back from a long weekend and jump right into the mail sack. I can't wait. Send your questions in. We'll answer them coming up 30 minutes from now. On the heels of your conference, the old Pac-12, announcing, you know what? It's none of your beeswax how much money we're going to make in our TV deal. All right? Why don't you go follow a different lead here? That's none of your information. They then announce, as the Big 12 is beginning their media days today, I think it's a three-day event, at least a two-day event, I know that, in Frisco, Texas. Big 12 media days always start us off. The Pac-12 has announced that they will not be partaking in media days. One of the quotes in the story was on Front Office Sports. Came from Rick Hart, who is the senior VP and deputy commissioner. Mm-hmm. He said, those things are expensive. You get a little buzz, and then it all goes away. A lot of static around that time. What do they even mean? And then simply adding that they plan on taking the funds that they would have spent for a conference media day and using it for promotional events throughout the football season. What does that mean? Nobody knows. But what's the reaction to year one of the conference and in its new look, iteration, and form saying we don't want to get the word out about our brand and about our teams?
Broke boys.
Yeah.
I don't know how there's not another takeaway. I've already seen some of the pushback, counteract, Oregon State fan stuff of like, yeah, well, it's garnering attention just being talked about, not getting it, so there's no point in having it. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, it's good to be talked about, but this isn't about being talked about per se as much as it is like a celebration that your season's upcoming.
Here are our coaches. Here are our players.
The players, you get to highlight them. You allow them like, hey, this is why this year we're going to take a step and be improved. And then you generate conversation. Hey, is this team really going to be good? Not that we dive into the full landscape of the conference, but Wazoo, Oregon State, Boise State are pretty, two of those are in our old conference that was. And then you have one that's pretty a thorn in the side of Oregon and Oregon State and the national college football landscape in general. So, I mean, you can paint it however you want to paint it. I think it's a disaster. I think it's an utter mistake. And this tells me you're absolutely broke. And I've already kind of been feeling this way for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Since they, proclaim that they got this war chest of funds, and then we proceed to not watch them really spend it the way we thought they would. You pair that with the media rights stuff, I think this conference is pretty much telling us without telling us, we're broke, and we don't make a lot of money, and we're going to conserve as much of this as we possibly can. And it's their choice. If they don't want to do a media day, so be it. But I think that's a grave mistake. There was nothing funnier last year, maybe in all of the media days, than the smoking jacket on the Cougar.
They did the Ducks
on the couch.
Or Beavs and Cougs after dark in Las Vegas. Come have a cocktail hour.
You can laugh at it.
It was hilarious.
We joked about it, but it was hilarious. And it was worth being taught. I still have the photos on my phone. They're great.
They actively invited every media member who I think they did it right on the heels of the Big 12, if I'm not wrong. And they basically sent memos to all those reporters like, come on up to Vegas.
And they got all of them to show up.
And a lot of them showed up and had some fun with it.
So I just, you got to be creative. You got to stand out. And yeah, you want to get a team ultimately in the playoffs. And you very well could, but I think there's a massive mistake. Media days are not the most important thing for a conference, but damn it if it's not a fun reminder that college football is right around the corner, camp is right around the corner, and all these fan bases are going to be jacked out of their minds about watching their team this season. You don't have that now. Now Oregon State has to create their own media day.
Right.
And say,
you're
going
to get your local scribes to go down, but nothing outside of your bubble.
You come to Valley Football Center, and Shepherd will have fun with you. Like, it's fine. You did that anyway in the past. You'd have your own team media day and your regular conference media day. I think it's a big mistake.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed out last year's event, because that was going to be something I noted of. You did something last year, because you clearly understood the interest in it, and I thought it worked for you. I remember that. There's not much that I remember from media days outside of Oregon-related or Big Ten-related stuff at this point. But that one I remember, that was hilarious. And they were sitting up having a cocktail hour, and to your point, the Cougar in the velvet coat sitting down. That ended up being a nice talking point for you. It's not the end-all, be-all. You can survive as a conference. Like, this isn't going to limit their ability to get a team into the college football playoff. But I feel like at times the people who are defending this kind of stuff are conflating two different points. It's just about the idea of this is a massive year for the new look conference. You went from not basically existing over the last 2 years to now re-existing again in a new form, and some excitement of like, all right, a normalcy, especially if I would hope from Oregon State and Washington State fans, it's not what it was. It probably will never be what it was again. But guess what you have this year? You got a conference schedule.
Yeah.
Guess what you have this year? A conference champion.
Yep.
And that conference champion will have a decent shot at making the college football playoff because last year James bleeping Madison got in. And so, like, there just seems to be, at least in that regard, Oregon State's got a new coach. There seems to be some enthusiasm about that.
They're also doing their schedule thing different. Remember, at the end of the year, they make
like,
the two teams.
Like, go tout that. Like, here's what we're doing. We're trying new things, and this is how we're going to stand out. And I just, why you would turn down the opportunity to showcase some of your players and programs and the optimism. Like a lot of the media day stuff you roll your eyes at. Every coach says we're going to be great. This is we're lining up to win 11 games and then you're going to get fired week five.
Sure.
Like, I know that's how the way it's going to work, but to your larger point, I love media days because it is a reminder of, dude, we're 7 Saturdays away from college football. It is almost here.
Mm-hmm.
In media days, it's kind of like the Hall of Fame game in the NFL. When you get the Hall of Fame game, you're like, ooh, I'm not going to watch a lot of preseason football, but I know that NFL football is right around the corner on my calendar.
Yep.
That's the way I view media days, man, and it's a way to just kind of, oh, that's right, that guy went there. Oh, that's right, he's their coach, and kind of refresh yourself going into the season. It's a really bad look to not want to publicize how much money you're making as a conference. It makes it look like a ridiculously low number that you're not out, you know, beating your chest and bragging about how much you're making.
Oh, make no mistake,
right?
Dirt.
It's bad. If that's the case,
if that your stance is, I can't tell you it's none of your business.
It's a disaster.
Your number is under double digits.
Yes, it's in the single digits, which is not good. And now to add this on top of it, I mean, I thought you're the only, by the way, they're the only conference that's not doing it. Like the MAC does a media day, the American Conference does a media day, the Sun Belt does a media. Literally all of them can find a way to afford it. None of them have rich TV contracts. You don't have to go to Vegas and buy everybody caviar if you don't want to do that.
Yep.
Just find a way to get the messaging out and pump up your product. If you want to, you know, 3 years from now, Boise's made a playoff, Oregon State's got their footing, Fresno State's, like, whatever the storylines are, 3 years from now, you want to turn around and say, guys, we're not making a lot of money. I don't know if it's worth it. I'm still going to disagree with the stance, but at least it'll make a little more sense on merit. For right now, year one of your new look conference, it's just, it's a swing and a miss at a pitch that's right down the plate that you have no business swinging and missing on because it's just an opportunity to showcase your conference. I did wonder in the aftermath of this, I don't think the other conferences would do it if they're all willing to pay and the Pac-12's not. But if I were one of the commissioners, I would reach out to the other conferences and say, what do we have to do and where could a location be that we have a group of whatever media day where we get the conferences to come together in one big situation where we can pool the resources because our TV contracts aren't what they are for the other conferences, and you'd have a decent shot at getting more reporters in because it's not just one specific conference.
Oh, you mean like a huge,
like a group of six media day, like here's the MAC over here, here this wings the Pac-12 and this wings the MAC, and that's fine, maybe you are, but I'm just thinking of ways that you can financially make this more reasonable. Really bad look for the Pac-12. A week after the conference began.
Hang with me here. If you're not going to spend the money for this, what are you going to spend it on?
They're saying for promotional events in the fall. I don't know what that means.
What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Because promotional event is literally what we're talking about.
This is the most promotional event you can
literally
have.
Is a promotional event for the whole conference. Promotional event per team is a different thing. But promotional event, this is as promotional as you get for an entire conference. What an idiotic statement.
Yeah, I don't get it, man. I don't get it. Rough look for the Pac-12. The conference just came into its new iteration last week, and their first two headlines are, you don't know how much money we'll make, you're never going to know, and we're not having a meeting.
The only thing I wish, it reminds me a little of it's like Blazer conversation in some ways. I wish we could just call balls and strikes. I don't know why we need to get in this weird world of people pretending something is great when it's not, or it's not a big deal when it is. Like, that's what I feel like we're going to kind of get out of some of this, is you're going to get Cougar fan and Beaver fan, and they're going to tell you, oh, it's no big deal. Who cares? Who cares? You never cared anyway. Why do we care now?
I mean, we've sent somebody to media days every year. Sometimes more people than not, but but now it's a little bit different than Big Ten, but sure.
And we'll never send anybody to a Pac-12 media day. It's not about that, though. It's just about, just say that, this is dumb. Just do it. Just spend the money.
It's dumb.
Have it. Celebrate your conference, your first year. I mean, that's the thing that bothers me, I think, the most. It's like, I wouldn't want you to get rid of it in general. It'd be very odd to not have it year two and
then have
on.
One in year one, or, yeah.
It's year one.
It's year one.
You were a two-team conference, still calling yourselves the Pac-12 last year, with a makeshift weird alliance to another conference. It was very odd. Then you got sued by the conference you had a partnership with.
Because you poached their teams.
Because you poached the teams. And then now you're trying to deny it. I don't know. The whole thing is odd to me. Yeah. But it's year freaking one.
Let's go.
What are you waiting for your promotional event? This is the promotional event.
Am I going to get like a pregame concert on the CW before one of the games?
I'd rather you just come out and tell me the truth. We're broke as crap, and we don't have a lot of money. We can't afford it. But that can't be the case either. They have to have some money to be able to hold a media day.
Is Ashanti coming to play Corvallis too? Promotional event?
I mean, if she wants to get on a bird and land in Corvallis and get out of there, let her do it. Whatever. I just, there's got to be, have it at the Oregon State Fair.
Anywhere, dude. Sakes, have it at the Oregon Convention Center.
It's very odd to me in your first year to punt on it. And then when somebody follows up and goes, why? Like, because we're saving our money for a promotional event.
Promotional events.
Isn't this literally a promotional event?
Hard to get more promotional than this, but Pac-12 disagrees. We have a poll question up at Dirt and Sprague on Twitter. Is it a mistake for the Pac-12 to not have a media day for their upcoming football season? Yes or no? Very simple one. You can go vote.
You cannot be voting no on it. I will fundamentally disagree. You cannot be voting. Call balls and strikes.
We have a 25.9% vote right now saying no, it's not a bad
idea. Okay, all right. Then what do you want? I don't get it.
They want Ashanti raising the loaf in Reser Stadium. That's what I want to promote.
Okay.
Let's get to some NFL stuff. This is really weird behavior. Why would anybody want to do this? We'll dive into it in the NFL next on The Fan. Well, we got the mail sack coming up top of the hour. We've been taking shots at everybody today, dude. Team USA sucks again. The Blazers are boring and didn't do anything cool.
Pulisic.
What's up with the Pac-12 being stupid? Can I get a positive story out here somewhere?
I got a positive story.
You got an uplifting one? You can be a positive Patty for me today?
We have an NFL head coach that wants to sit in the corner in a chair and watch another head coach do it with his team.
What do they call those chairs again?
I
can't remember.
Third-party observation chair.
They have a pineapple on their front porch. This one's, dude, all-time wild. All-time wild. This is one of the most, what? Make it make sense. It's real.
Why would this be real? Why would you even tell anybody this?
Let's see if we can figure it out, okay? So Seth Wickersham, who writes for ESPN, when Wickersham has something on your team, just get ready, okay? Put your seatbelt on. Something chaotic. We had the end of the Seahawk dynasty there. Didn't he have a big one on the Brady Belichick stuff at the end of Brady Belichick in New England? That was a massive one. So there's been some of these over the years, right? And now we have one out of Denver where this came out. So he followed the Broncos throughout the course of the playoffs. Wickersham was. He was in their locker room following them. And in following them, somehow the tidbit got brought to him, according to Sean Payton, that when Bill Belichick and the Patriots divorced in 2024, so we had the splitting of the sweatshirt and the Patriots, Sean Payton considered presenting Broncos owner Greg Penner a proposal saying, you go hire Bill Belichick technically as the head coach until he reaches 15 more wins, which is what he needed to break Don Shula's all-time record. I will temporarily step down and be the assistant head coach and just run the offense. And then once Belichick hits 15 wins, I will step back in and become the head coach. In the end, it was too complicated, but he thought that in his own head was a good idea to present to the owner of the team. Mm-hmm. Let this guy be the head coach. I'll take a back seat. None of this makes sense to me.
Also should be noted, Wickersham was with him during the playoffs, and as he notes in the story, 16-hour days. So, I'm just wondering if Peyton got a little loopy by the end of one of these.
After one of these, that's the best example, reasoning we can come up with?
I've said this before, man. These guys are all psychotic individuals who don't live real lives. Their lives are just grinding tape and being in a facility. What do you even do for 16 hours? How many times can you rewind a play?
Look at that A gap.
Look at that A gap. I didn't notice the B gap here.
Oh, look at that B gap.
The C gap's looking pretty tasty here.
You check that other C gap, though?
8 hours should be good. No, we got to do it for 16 because that's going to make or break everything.
Got to be efficient, man.
All jokes aside, I don't know why you would do this. And also, I love the idea, no matter how close you are relationship-wise, I love the idea that he has Belichick getting 15 wins with the Broncos.
How long is that going to take?
And then just has Belichick riding off into the sunset, and then he comes in and he goes, all right, I'm coach again. None of this makes any sense.
Who's in charge in the locker room?
Belichick.
Who has the final voice?
Belichick.
Who makes the play call, roster decision?
It's Belichick.
Starting and sitting.
He has him winning 15 games with the Broncos, which means he's done a good job, and then just stepping aside? What world are you living in? What a psychotic thing to ever admit
or have found out, the Wickersham Seahawk piece was good. It exposed what a lot of us felt and thought between the Legion of Boom and the Russ and the Pete stuff. This is a whole other level of breaking my brain. I don't care how close or real it was or wasn't. It's an insane thing to read that an NFL head coach, a Hall of Fame one at that,
yes,
was floating the idea
of, I don't want to be the head coach,
of letting some other guy do it to break the record so he could seemingly do it and then just step in and act as if that Hall of Fame guy is going to walk away because he broke the record.
To your point,
what are you talking about?
What if in year one he started 15-0?
This
that
is
did,
my
clearly
whole
didn't
point.
Happen, but
he's
what
not
if
just saying,
it did?
Well, I'm good. I'm going to walk
all
away
right,
now, Sean.
All right, seducers.
Thanks, Sean.
Good night. Thank you, everybody. It's been great. You were a great crowd, Denver. I appreciate you. Now
thanks.
I'm done.
Thanks, Sean. See you later.
Wait a minute. This guy's undefeated. Shouldn't he be our head coach now? Don't we want to keep him? And to the other point of how long it would have taken, so this would have started in the 2024 season, which was the previous year before this one, Bo Nix's rookie season. Denver won 10 games. So he wouldn't have hit. They lost their playoff game, which doesn't count anyways. But he would have been then the carryover head coach for another year. Let's see how many weeks. Let me pull up their schedule from this year.
Yeah.
And see how many weeks it would have he would have been their head coach. So
this would have been in 25, right? Because he got fired in 24.
So 24 was his last. Oh, so last year would have been the first year?
Last year would have been the first year because he was the North Carolina coach.
Didn't he take a year off, though, from coaching? Because he took 2024 off. I think this was for the 2024 season because they had Gerard Mayo in New England for a year.
You're right.
And
you're
then
right.
hired
and no
Mike
team
Vrabel.
Hired him. Remember the
so
Falcons
no team hired
blind.
Him. And he worked on McAfee and did media. And then, yes, you were correct, first year in. So let's just play it out. He would have taken over in 24 after the firing. They won 10 games. So let's say they win the same number of games. Bill Belichick's their head coach in name only. Then he would have had to follow it up with another coaching stint this year in Denver. At which point, as I pull up their schedule, it would have taken him. They won their fifth game October 19th, so he would have coached the first seven games of the season.
But see, at that point, I think he rides out the season.
Right, you would be 5-2.
But then what, gets the AFC title game? And then just walks away because he's broke the record? And none of it makes sense.
Anybody with a competitive spirit asking for this is just weird. Like, that's just
I think I genuinely believe this, and I have for some time. Broncos' season was remarkable last year.
It's a great year. They got all the way to the AFC title game. Healthy quarterback, they probably win the game.
We have Bronco listeners. I'm sure they're feeling jacked out of their minds about this season, Nick's being healthy, all that. I have been noting this the entire... I think that dude is weird. I think it's all odd. I think his dynamic with almost any player not named Drew Brees becomes contentious.
Mm.
Just a fascinating, like, I wouldn't even know how to process this if we were doing a Denver-based show.
Let alone if you were the owner of the team who just spent an insane amount of money to hire Sean Payton to be your head coach. Got you through
how much money is Belichick? Like, is he coming in for free?
No, he's not working
to break
for free.
The record?
Like, you're my guy. I hired you, and you're coming to me with the idea of let somebody else do my... Are you taking a pay cut?
Mm.
Are you taking $2 million off your salary to give to Bill Belichick? How's that going to work? It just... All of it is strange, confusing. The leftover note of this, outside of the weirdness of Sean Payton, which I'm with you, continues to grow.
Yeah.
How much is that, because he's not getting another shot, of the all-time gnaw at you, so close, you could taste it, stats?
15 games.
Belichick, 15 right wins there. Away yeah. is, in like...
That's running a marathon and stopping at 25.
Yes, like you're
to me, that's the same thing.
The finish line's right there, dude.
That's
Just go 20 more minutes.
Yeah,
jog. You're almost done. Mm-hmm. And no, but I don't think he's ever going to get a shot again to be a head coach in the NFL.
He shouldn't. He's not good. He wasn't good at the end of New England. But we couldn't be honest about that because he's the GOAT.
You're not wrong.
Like, okay, but like, you know what? It happens to everybody. Look at all the great coaches. If they don't prematurely walk away,
right.
It doesn't tend to age particularly well. It happens to every coach in every sport.
Yep. To nearly break a record that I think has been at times in the conversation, although maybe it's changed a little bit because of the length of the season going on.
I'd argue it's harder to win and break that. I mean, to be as close as he is a tremendous achievement.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
he's already
no
considered the
it.
Greatest coach by most, I would say,
sure.
right?
I would tend to think so, yeah.
15 wins is brutal to not be number one, but like also, let's think about the time and place when these coaches were setting and making these records. The NFL right now, is it as competitive as it's ever right. been?
Without a doubt.
Yeah. So like being 15 games.
It's still an incredible accomplishment, but that's going to nod him every night he goes to bed for the rest of his life probably because he's a psycho competitor and you were that close. And to the point, like I think Peyton and Belichick clearly have a good relationship to the point where he's willing to maybe float this to his owner. it makes me think that it's something that he rants and raves about. Maybe he got fired, which they didn't call a firing. They called it splitting or parting of ways.
Yeah.
That he's like, dude, I am so close to breaking this record. I can't believe this is the end. I have to get another shot. And that's where it comes from, Sean Payton. Still weird behavior on Payton's part, but I think it shows you how close and Belichick can taste it.
Maybe hire a real general manager. Maybe don't screw Tom Brady out before Tom Brady's done playing. Get him real targets, real weapons. You know, maybe start evolving with the sport a little bit. Instead of just thinking like, hey, my career has been amazing, and I just won a Super Bowl not that long ago, and instead, to me, he tripled down on everything instead of like growing and changing in any way.
Yep.
So if he maybe does that and evolves a little bit at the end, maybe he and Brady have one more go around and one more shot at serious contention versus the way it kind of just. Yeah, it petered out.
Mac
Jones
sure.
came in, and
the ending of Brady and Belichick in New England was bad, man. That pick,
was a pick six
against Tennessee,
like just wild card weekend, right?
Ugly, like ugly terrible. Ending there. Yep. So that's one of the weirder ones that I've seen in a while. Sean Payton considering floating to his owner. Hey, let's bring in Bill for 15 wins. How long does that take? We don't know. I'll be the assistant coach. He could be the head coach. Weird behavior out of the NFL. But a great piece by Wickersham nonetheless. That's just one of the interesting takeaways. There's a lot more in there if you're a Broncos fan that you could dig your teeth into about where the team's at and where they're going in years to come. Last to get to in the final hour of the show, get you set for your day and your night in sports. Maybe some final thoughts on Team USA's unceremonious end to the World Cup run. Let's start, though, with the Sparta TRT mail sack. We're going to get to that in a moment, but before we do that, how about a pair of tickets to go see Zach Bryan July 25th, 2026 at Autzen Stadium? I love that you had to give this away without me yesterday. Do you know who Zach Bryan is?
He's an artist at Autzen Stadium on July 25th.
It's a big deal he's coming to Autzen. The concert is coming up again July 25th. The code word that you can text in is Zach, Z-A-C-H, to 503-864-6326, and you'll be entered for your chance to win a pair of tickets again to see Zach Bryan at Autzen Stadium July 25th. Keep it on the fan all week for more chances to win, and 1051thefan.com for complete details. Final hour starts next on The Fan.